I think Shlichus is going through a change because originally Shlichus was pioneering. You didn't have to have too much talent, you just have to have chutzpah. You were going in uncharted waters, you were doing things that nobody did before, nobody can tell you how to do it, what to do. And in the world, when you said you're Chabad, they had no idea what you're talking about. What are you doing in town? You're not a shul, you're not a school, you're not a community center. What are you? We had a hard time. I'm here to do, they don't understand. What's your title? What are you doing here? In many, many places in the world today, if you say you're Chabad, it makes more sense than to say I'm a rabbi. Because who needs a rabbi? That was pioneering. The pioneering part is over. You don't have to break through to the world. Now you have to feed the world, now that you got their attention. Now you have to give them teichen, you have to give them... So it's changing. The role of the fundraiser, starting from scratch and building a building, that's not what it is anymore. The building is there. Now where's the teichen? You got the people coming, now what are you going to feed them? And that's becoming a little bit of a crisis, because many balabatim who have been in Chabad houses for 5-6 years, they heard all the inspiration talk. They're ready to move on, to sit and learn, and we're not giving them that. So they end up going someplace else. So they came up with this idea of Shluchei Torah, which is an absolutely necessary, they just haven't figured out how to do it. Who pays and who goes. So it's a technical problem here, but that is the next stage. The next stage is the world is ready to sit and learn. The Frumah world is, the other Chassidim are, even Litvisha people are. The world wants to learn. Maybe that's why JLI is so successful. But that's not nearly enough. So that's going to be the future of... And who pays whom and how do you work out the finances? Something is going to have to happen. But to completely give up on Shlichus is also not such a good idea.
So, but you agree we have it hard.
Yeah. But those who always wanted to go on Shlichus should not change their mind. There are people who are not cut out for it, and they were never intending to go on Shlichus. They're going to go into business, and they're going to be matzliach. But if you are shliach-oriented, don't give up. There are shluchim going out all the time, under all sorts of different arrangements or... And in some way, without offending anybody, in some way, the young shluchim are more in tune with what needs to happen than the original shluchim.
I mean, it just seems that if we're meiser nefesh, like bittul, to work under somebody, it seems that in 20 years, chas v'shalom, maybe very few people, like some nasty politics, it's just not worth the fact. It's a fact. It's a very scary thing.
But it can't
it's
go
nature.
On.
It's nature.
Yes, but it can't go on forever.
You're saying, what can't go on?
This attitude that the...
We're scared to take a risk.
No.
Or the risk. Not that you're afraid of the risk, but the fact that it exists. That a shliach can... bring in his son-in-law, who is half your age, and make him your boss, without even asking you, or things like that. It's obviously so ridiculous. It's got to stop.
Wow.
It will. You know, you can only fool some of the people some of the time. You can only be an idiot for so long before you wake up and say, can't do this anymore. Anyway, I produced a movie. And I have very mixed feelings about it. I think you should see it. But I don't feel comfortable encouraging you to see it. You know what I mean? Like, mixed feelings. I asked Rabbonim to give a hechsher, and I hope they don't. That's very confusing. You know? But it is one of those things that makes or breaks life. The fact is, marriage, the institution of marriage, has a very bad reputation. You know, it's surprising that people still want to go on shlichus. It's surprising that people still want to get married. What are you doing? Don't you know the facts? Don't you see the risks? In your own family, you don't see what's going on? The unhappiness, the broken families, the misery. What are you doing? Why would you get married? No, my marriage will be... Don't be ridiculous. Marriage has a very bad reputation these days. There's a joke about lawyers are not bad people. 99% of them give the rest a bad name, but otherwise they're... So marriage is not bad, it's just that 99% don't work. What's going on here? The only answer is chassidus. I mean, it's just a sad fact. It's not even something to be proud of. Sadly, the only answer in the world, the only one who has an answer, is chassidus. And what is the answer? Like everything else, the answer is in defining what exactly is this thing called marriage. Vosidus. Everybody's talking about how to make it better, use this technique, that technique, communication skills. You haven't even defined what it is. What's a marriage? That's where you need chassidus. Because chassidus tells you what's what. So the first thing, marriage involves a mashpia and a mekabel. And that sounds holy, it sounds religious, it's a fact of life. A marriage is a man and a woman, which means a mashpia and a mekabel. Ideally, the man should be the mashpia. Ideally. And the woman should be mekabel. So for the last couple of years, people who call me about shidduchim, they're going out, they can't make a decision, they don't know who to go out with, they don't know what they're looking for. All of this confusion boils down to this issue. A guy calls up, and he says, I'm going out with a girl, she's very good, we understand each other, it's all nice. I don't know. How do I decide? So I ask him, is she willing to follow you? Is she willing to have you take the lead and she'll follow you? And most of the Bachrim that I talk to say, why? Why should she follow me? We're together. We're partners. It's not a partnership. It's a mashpia and a mekabel. A woman calls up and says, I'm going out with a guy, he's very good, very nice, very blah, 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 blah. I don't know why, I'm hesitating, I don't feel comfortable. I know why. Because he's not a mashpia. He asks you what you want to do. What do you need him for? You know what you want to do. So he doesn't feel like a mashpia to her. She doesn't feel like a mekabel to him. So what's the question? Not for you. Oh, but she's smart and she's good and she... Yeah, not for you. She's not mekabel from you. Now, part of the reason is we're not told that that's how it's supposed to be. None of the girls who are going out know that they're supposed to be looking for a mashpia. They think they're looking for an equal. But something inside of them says, wait a minute, if we're equal, what do I need them for? And he doesn't know that he's supposed to be mashpia. In fact, he doesn't even know what it means to be mashpia. So when I sit and talk to Bacharim, I say, you know, you have to be mashpia. What does that mean? You have to make all the decisions? She doesn't have any opinion at all? What is that? So to most people, mashpia sounds like a dictator. That doesn't feel right. And mekabel sounds, to most women, being a mekabel sounds like a shlomazel. Doesn't feel right either. But if you don't have a healthy mashpia and a healthy mekabel, you don't have a marriage. It's not a negotiable detail. This is it. Either yeah or no. So let's try to put it into words. Being a mashpia means not that you make all the decisions, but that you take all the responsibility. It's your home, it's your family, you're the mashpia. So you take all the responsibility. If you let your wife make decisions, which sometimes is a good idea, and her decision turns out to be a failure, it's not her problem, it's your problem. Because you're responsible. So even when she makes a decision, she doesn't become responsible. You're the mashpia. Which means there's never this, in every marriage counseling discussion conversation, look, I do what I'm supposed to do. Tell her, fix her. She's the problem. That's it. Now I know what the problem is. There's no mashpia. There's a 50% partner who claims that he did his 50%. What do you want from him? Now let her do her 50%. This is not a marriage. It's not a marriage. Not it's a bad marriage, it's a difficult... It's not a marriage. It never got off the ground. If your wife is having a problem being mekabel, you are responsible. That's a mashpia. You're responsible doesn't mean it's your fault. It means you fix it. It's your responsibility. Her problem is your responsibility. That's called a mashpia. That's why it's so upsetting when a yeshiva calls up the parents of a child and says, you know, we can't have your kid. He doesn't like to learn. Says, excuse me. That's what I sent him to you for. What, are you going to only teach students who want to learn? So where are you a mashpia? The job of a mashpia is to make the mekabel into a healthy mekabel. No, they don't want to be mekabel. That's what we hire you for. That's why you get the big bucks.
It sounds a little Sfardi.
Sfardi?
In the relationship aspect. She doesn't want to be mekabel?
A few pitch. A few pitch and everything will be good. That's not a mashpia.
That's the opposite.
That's a policeman. So the first definition of mashpia is it's your responsibility. This is your project, and every part of the project is your responsibility. So it should never be like you feel like you step away, you say, look, not my problem anymore, her problem. There's no such thing ever. Yes, it's her problem, but her problem is your responsibility. Fix it. You can't? Find somebody. Find an etzit. But it's your, you can't step out. It's her problem means we're not one. I have my problem, she has her problems. This is not a couple. These are roommates. Sometimes a husband has a bigger problem understanding what a makabel is. Not that he doesn't understand what a mashpia is. Doesn't understand what a makabel is. Which, of course, prevents him from being an effective mashpia. So there's this event, this incident where this couple were in Yechidus, and they got into an argument. And the husband said this, she said that. So the husband said to the Rebbe, isn't she supposed to listen to me? Like dragging the Rebbe into the argument. So the Rebbe said, no. You're supposed to behave in such a way that she wants to listen to you. That tells you two things. It tells you what a mashpia is, but it also tells you what a makabel is. You have to behave in a certain way so that she will want to listen to you. So what's a makabel? A makabel is not somebody who wants to agree with you. She wants to listen to you. Why? Because that's what a makabel is. A makabel is somebody who desperately seeks hashpah, not partnership. A wife doesn't need a partner. Oh, they say they do. They want a wife. Every wife wants a wife to do the diapers and the dishes. It's very nice to have a wife. But a makabel is looking for hashpah, not for equality. Which means there's a certain bittul of a mashpia and a different kind of bittul of the makabel. Ideally, they're both looking for bittul. They're looking to become something bigger than themselves, to get beyond themselves. A mashpia gets beyond himself by giving more than he has. Going beyond your koiches. A makabel becomes bigger than herself by giving up everything and just being makabel. So it's really two forms of bittul. The mashpia gives everything away, and the makabel is makabel everything unconditionally. So what does that mean? A woman wants to be so open, so receptive, so non-defensive, that she lets her husband into her neshama without hesitation. It doesn't mean obedience. It means she can trust you to such a degree that she doesn't even have to think. Whatever you say is fine. Not because she doesn't have an opinion, but because she has accepted you so completely that whatever you want is what she wants. In simple language, a woman has to be able to lean on her husband. A man doesn't lean on his wife. So she has to feel so totally secure that she can trust that when she has no strength and when she has nothing, she can lean on you and you will support her. I'd say emotionally, morally, in every way. So even though she's not helpless, but she knows if she were completely helpless, you're there. And she can rely on you, and she can lean on you, and she can trust you. It's good. Now she can be capable, and she can be intelligent and successful. But because she knows that even if she's none of that, she has you to lean on. But if you're thinking, hey, don't look at me. I did my part. I'm done. Now it's your turn. Well, who's she leaning on? Then she has nobody to lean on.
So what's dating? Why looking for Milas?
There's nothing wrong with Milas. There's nothing wrong with good looking. But the bottom line is, if she's very talented and has all the Milas and she's gorgeous, but she ain't following you, run away. She's not following you. So, was take the alle Milas, but it's not going to do you any good. Dating and marriage are extreme opposites. In dating, you're completely selfish, and you're supposed to be. Marriage, completely selfless. In dating, you have only one purpose. You're checking her out. Completely selfish. What are you doing for her? Nothing. Why would you do anything for her? Who is she? It's literally like going shopping. You're looking for a pair of shoes. What are you going to do for the shoes? What are you going to do for the shoes? The question is only, what will the shoes do for you? That's dating. And that's why there's no pain. If it's not your pair of shoes, you go to the next store. You don't have my size? Boy, I'm all broken up. In fact, the language that people are using these days, hopefully they weren't using it in your time. I was going out with this girl, but we broke up. You broke up? What does that even mean? I saw her twice and now we broke up. You broke what? It's such a goyish language. And even the dating, the word dating, we don't date. We don't date ever. We meet. And if you don't want to meet again, then you don't meet again. That's not a breakup. But there are bachrim who pashut are into dating. It's a new machla. They're into dating. Who did you date? I'm going to have a date. And you go, I had a very good date. Now I'm really excited because the next girl I go out with, wait a minute, you just had a good date. Marry her. No, I'm into dating. Let's see who else there is. This is a churb. It's a churb.
So
in
the Echidus, Rabbi told him that it's not. In other words, Esr and Samal means that you're that type of person, that you make her want. In other words, it's not dictatorship, rather Mashbiyah Mekabel. So what does it mean practically? Like, how is one Mashbiyah and how is one
So the first thing I'm telling you is that a woman will follow you if she can trust you. If she can lean on you, then she's got what she needs. And that's the condition. But then what is she? She is a complete mikabel. She can really be mikabel because you gave her the security. So whatever it is you want is her pleasure. That's called a mikabel.
Why is it that way? That's how they wired.
So now if I use this marshal, I don't know if you heard it. When Abyeul came to teach us Chassidus, we were still in Bedford. We were 16. And the whole yeshiva experience up to 16 was like nothing. We didn't learn anything. It was nothing. We didn't have a real teacher. We didn't have a classroom. It was a churban. All the teachers, they had their own problems. It was. We didn't know what it meant to sit in a classroom. To have a mashpia, to have somebody. Abyeul came, and from the first day we realized something's different. We pasha couldn't wait for the class. We sat there, these wild kids sat there without breathing, waiting for Abyeul to give a hesber to say. It was a completely different experience. And for the first time, we became Talmidim. We were never Talmidim before. So when the hour was up, we didn't want it to end. That he would stop talking was like the worst thing in the... Oh, he's going to stop. No, he can't. Don't let him. Lock the door. Actually, I got to tell you. You know these locks on the inside the door? You know, they snap shut. So if you turn it and push the little button down, then it doesn't open or close. If you close it and push the button down, then you can't open it. So we would push the button down, and Abiel couldn't figure out how to get out of the room. He'd push and push, like the screws, he would push. He couldn't figure out how to make the thing work. We didn't want him to leave. We didn't want him to stop talking. We understood more, we understood less. It didn't matter. Just keep being mashpia. We didn't care.
So what did he do?
When he did finish speaking, begashmias, we couldn't get out of our chair. First of all, we didn't want to. But even begashmias, to get up out of the chair, which means it's over? No, it can't be. So even after he walked out, we just sat there. We had to readjust the whole, okay, it's time to go. That's called a mikabel. Whatever he said was wonderful. Not like you're sitting there thinking, no, wait a minute, I don't know. No. We weren't judging, we weren't filtering, we weren't having an opinion about what, we just wanted to keep hearing. Just keep and stay here forever. I don't care. We're never going anywhere. Just keep talking. That's called a mikabel. It's called a Talmud, by the way. If you're sitting and listening to a shiur and you're processing, oh yeah, that makes sense, you're not listening. You're not a mikabel. A mikabel does only one thing. Mikabel. As soon as you start thinking, yes, no, I'm comfortable, not comfortable, I've heard this before, you're not a mikabel. So a mikabel completely loses all defenses. I'm not protecting myself from what I do understand, don't understand. No defenses. You say whatever you have to say and I'll absorb it. That's a macabre. But who do you do that with? Obviously, someone who you don't have to worry about. You have complete confidence, you have complete trust. Whatever he says is what we need to hear. But if you're not sure, if you think maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about, like when you have a misnagda shel Rosh Yeshiva, so now you're worried, no, wait a minute. He tells you pshat na mishnah, what could be wrong? How can he be right? So there's always a little, watch out. Then you're not makabel.
You can't be indecisive.
Huh?
You must be decisive as the husband.
No, you must be reliable.
The sign that she was decisive no matter what, so you might be wrong. You just talk crap.
There's no how is you don't let him in a transition between before marriage and after marriage. Because you're always not that. So how does that, how do you change?
Yeah, that's an
and
important.
So how does it blend in to make sure that you're making them happy, like let's say they like the color red and not blue, like they have preferences. So part of you being nice to them is valuing what they think or
sure.
But at the same time,
but to
want
them
to be able to lean on you. In other words, when it comes to taking responsibility that you
yes,
just,
yes.
Go for.
To them, your approval of what they're saying is absolutely essential. They're not asking you for permission. You're not the boss. But your approval means everything. A guy calls me, he's married 2.5 years, and he says, you know, I noticed that my wife has a personality that she always like this and like this and like this. I said, excuse me, you're not dating anymore. He's saying he noticed something about his wife, and he doesn't know what to do. That's what you do when you're dating. You're not dating anymore. She's your wife. Take care of her. You've got to make that switch. Those bachurim who are into dating continue to date after they're engaged. And that's why engagements break up. Then they continue to date even after they're married. So, a guy gets married, and he calls me and he says, I'm married 8 months, 9 months, and there's this woman, neighbor, she's much smarter than my wife, and I feel more comfortable with her than my wife, and I'm in a crisis. That's called you're still dating. You're still trying to decide which woman you like better. Excuse me, there are no two women. This is your wife. Can you settle down? You found another woman who is smarter. Good for her. She's not your wife. Are you married or not? Are you in? It is hard to make that switch. But it comes from the respect, from the derech eretz, that you have for marriage, not for your wife, for marriage. When you say hare'at, there's something awesome and powerful about that. You're not the same person anymore. But if marriage is just a continued dating, then yes, every other woman is a threat. Ugh, what about her? Oh, I should have married her. Maybe. This is horrible. It's torture.
Besides that, all your years in yeshiva, the clothes, the clothes, you are a makabel. You don't take responsibilities. You want to be free. You're ben chayim for a reason. Suddenly, you're taking, it's very heavy responsibility to suddenly change it.
And
you look at marriage so great, so sacred, that it's heavy, it's extremely heavy. That's the major transition change.
But I think this is the complication of being male. It's so much easier to be female. A female is a makabel from the beginning to the end, from childhood to a man is much more complicated. To this one, he has to be a makabel. To this one, he has to be a mashpia. So a chosid goes into the Rebbe and says, Rebbe, help me with this and this. I'm a makabel. The Rebbe says, why, was monster by mir? Mon by zich. I thought I was a makabel.
Absolutely.
Herav zayna makabel, un zaya balabos av zich, and become a mashpia to you. Oh. That too? So, being a makabel is a hachona for a man, is a hachona for becoming a mashpia. But I think that the solution and the crisis is in seeing yourself as a mashpia. What does that mean? How do you get there? What are you supposed to do? Without that, it's not that the marriage has a problem. There's no marriage. There's no marriage.
Sometimes it could be that for the girl. It could also be, she could be a proper makabel, but also let's say for the fact that she's coming until now being makabel, let's say from her parents, from her house, all of a sudden she's coming into your house as a new man, and you have to be the mashpia. It's not easy sometimes for automatically that, it takes a while until it could come that she completely relies on you. So what's the process until it gets to that?
Shana Rishena. A woman told me that she realized that she's really married. How did she realize? Every time in her life when she got frightened and something was threatening her, her first reaction was, Tati! She screamed, Tati! Here she got into a car accident, and as she was about to hit the other car, she screamed her husband's name. She said, oh, I'm married. It's not Tati anymore. That is a major change, but it's not as complicated, because this is makabel and this is makabel, and the question is only from whom. But to switch from being a makabel to being a mashpia, that's why as a bocher you have to practice being a mashpia too. So bottom line, in simple language, can your wife trust you that you will always support her and she can lean on you and she can rely on you? Or do you sometimes step out of the relationship and say, you do. It's your problem. It doesn't seem so terrible, but it's the worst thing you can do. It's literally a form of a get. In this subject, I'm not married to you. Do your own thing. It's terrible. And then she doesn't know what she can trust you on. So the word trust can be a little bit confusing. It doesn't mean she trusts you that you're not a liar, that you're not stealing money. I don't mean that. She can trust you, meaning you will never abandon her. And I don't mean leave town and never come back. You will never abandon her in her confusion and her issue, in her problem, you won't abandon her.
What does that mean? Like you're with her. Let's say she's confused, there's issues, and you see what's wrong. You, no matter what, you have her back. What does that mean?
Yes, you take responsibility. It's not like, well, don't, you know, it's not my problem. Ooh, that's such painful. Your wife is having a problem with something, and she's upset, or she failed, and you say, it's not my problem. That is the most painful thing you can say to a wife. That's like saying, well, leave me out of this. Don't drag me into this. Don't drag you into it. You're my mashpia. You're my life.
What does the mashpia do if he needs his own support system?
He finds a mashpia.
And that is.
And what if you don't have a mashpia? Then you try to make your wife into your mashpia and you mess everybody up.
Possible that might, looking at it in a very chitzainistic way, possibly that the husband could, let's say, get a feeling that it seems like it's a relationship, I'm the mashpia and she's the mekabel, so I just have to be the support system for her and I'm the everything, and she could just sometimes, but it's just, you could get a feeling maybe of just a giving relationship, and but what am I gaining less necessarily from you, whereas my support also should come a little bit from you. It could be possible that the husband could get such a...
Not only possible, it is very common. What, I'm just going to give and give and give, and what am I getting? You have no idea what a mashpia is. Why is a mashpia mashpia? What does he get from it? That once in a while she'll be mashpia to him? That's ridiculous. I'll be mashpia to you if you mashpia to me. Well, I was mashpia yesterday.
Isn't love being mashpia? It's like in his element.
Huh?
Isn't he love being mashpia?
Love?
Like he likes, like Abraham, you know, couldn't, he had to find guests, he couldn't find love. Like when he had the milas this week. So then he went outside his tent. He needed guests, like he needed to give in order to be okay. Is that accurate?
That's not so much describing the mashpia function as midas, chesed. What does a mashpia get from being mashpia? The question is asked in Chassidus. The mekabel, obviously, the mekabel benefits because when she's mekabel, she gets hashpah. Understand why she would want to be mekabel. Why would a mashpia want to be mashpia? Mashpia means giving away. What do we give away for? I mean, this is, if you're learning Chassidus properly, the whole idea of Eidus and Kalim and Tzimtzum and Eid and Gili and Helim, the Kali gets Eid. What does the Eid get? Restricted, huh?
Same answer.
Restricted, limited, what for?
It's
tachlis. So it says in Chassidus, what does the mashpia get for being mashpia? Shleimus. He's not complete without a mekabel. Or tachlis. It's the same idea. Shleimus doesn't mean perfection. It means teichendik, a tachlis. A mashpia feels that what I have is not for me. So there has to be a makabel. If it's not for me, what am I carrying this around? So until he finds a makabel, he's not bishlemus. Unless he's such a balgaiva that he's convinced that whatever he has is for him. And then he doesn't need a makabel.
But that, you see, like, a couple where, like, the woman's like, oh, I'm going, blah, 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 blah. And the husband's just like, accept everything he does, and they just mess for life.
You see couples like that, where she looks like she's the mashpia and she's the boss and she's the macher and she's the, and he is like out to lunch. That's only on the surface. How is she happy being married to him? Because when nobody's looking, as a still at eight, he's the man. In fact, he is so much the mashpia that it doesn't bother him that if she that makes all the decisions, where's the pants and where the, fine, but I'm the man here. I don't have to scream about it, I don't have to show it, and I don't have to prove it. Bottom line is, you can lean on me, because I'm not going nowhere. On the other hand, you take a see couples who, because they're frum, have stayed together. She is the mashpia, and he is not. And she is, you know, everywhere, she's leading, she's the... And if you talk to her privately, she is so miserable. She is so miserable. She needs a mashpia. What do you mean she needs a mashpia? See, that's not correct. It's not she needs a mashpia. She needs to be a mekabel. That's her need. So it's not she needs something from her husband. She needs this, she needs that. She needs to be a mekabel, and he's not letting her. So ideally, no matter how talented the wife is, the husband should always be the mashpia, which means take responsibility. Now, let's talk a little bit about physical hashpo atzmis, and physical mekabel. Even if in business, in social things, in learning, the wife is ahead of the husband. And in those areas, she's actually the mashpia. She runs the business, she knows how to handle people, she's the mashpia, the leader. But in the bedroom, he's the mashpia. That's enough to have as a basis for the whole relationship. On the other hand, if in the bedroom he is not the mashpia, then he will not be able to be mashpia outside. She won't accept it. So, to put it bluntly, if in the bedroom the husband says, so what should we do? This relationship is devastated. In the physical function, where it's so obvious that the man is the mashpia and the woman is the mekabel, if emotionally it's not matching, it is so disturbing, it's so confusing. So to understand intimacy properly, physical intimacy, it is such a fundamental thing in the marriage, and nobody talks about it. Nobody. Tarnish. Not nice. Beletnish. So what do people do? They read secular books. They have to know what they're doing. So they listen to secular experts, and they read books about it, and in the end, they're conducting the most important part of their life like goyim. Completely like goyim. There's nothing Jewish about it. So Yeshe Mendel asked this chosin at the wedding. He said to him, "Du bist a chosin oder a misnagid?" The guy said, "Was willst du?" In the middle of dancing here, it's a wedding going. "Bist a chosin oder a misnagid?" He said, "Why is that relevant now?" He said, "Because a misnagid is makbid and machmer the 2 weeks that you're not allowed. A chosid is machmen and makbid the two weeks that you are allowed. So b'sta chosid, I'm just like it." What does that mean? When you're not allowed, you're not allowed. Not complicated. You know, what part of no don't you understand? But when you are allowed, now you have to be a mensch. Now you have to know what you're doing. Now you have to know how and when and where. Avdem daf mazayin amensh. Not as easy. Nobody talks about it. You sit and learn the vestas and the calendar and the harchokis and the maises. But what about yeah?
Are you going to talk to us?
That's why I made the movie.
Ah, right.
And
I don't know what that. All right.
What's it called?
The Lost Key. In a couple of months, you'll be able to get it everywhere.
Who acts?
Huh?
Who acts? Who are the actors?
It's not actors exactly. It's interviews. It's a documentary.
People talking about their personal lavatories?
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. That'd be really cool.
Just in the kugel. You know the word that the Eberstein makes yesh out of ayin, and our aveda is to make the yesh back into ayin. He makes from ayin yesh, and we have to make from yesh ayin. We have talents. We have talents in the yesh, and we have talents in the ayin. Without chassidus, there is no talent for ayin. We understand yesh. Ayin we don't understand. Chassidus makes ayin into a project. You can be good at it, you can get better at it. We understand ayin. Intimacy is different from everything else that goes on in the marriage, because everything else is yesh. Intimacy is ayin. In other words, intimacy is be'ikir what's not there. And the way to understand it is like this. The Eibishter created Adam, Zachar and Nekeva bara Eisa. Then they were separated. And they were told, Al kein yazev ish es ovir ves imei, v'dovak b'ishtei v'hoyu l'boser echad. they were Basar Echad. Then the Eberster separates them and tells them to get married so that they'll be Basar Echad. So what's going on here? Without Chassidus, they were created, Adam was created Zohar and the Keva, then the Eberster separated them, and they became two separate people. Now they're normal. Right? It seems like a progression of an improvement. Being Zohar and the Keva in one person, that's crazy. He separated them, now that's normal. The exact opposite. Separation is not holy. Any separation. Pirud, not holy. Achdus is holy. Pirud is Avodah Zarah. Is Elohim Achidim. So the fact that they were separate, that he was separated, they were separated, that's not good. And that's why Al Kain Yazev Ish as Avav Esimay and Vahoyu Basar Echad. Separate is not good. Echad is good. How do two people become Echad? And not in their minds or in their kavana, Basar Echad. And they become Basar Echad. That's the Hesbir. The Hesbir is the separation is unnatural. Which means, in order for Zohar and the Keva to be separate, you have to do something to create that separation. Because by nature, Zohar and the Keva, Bara Iser. So how do you become Basar Echad? Not by doing something. By not doing. Get rid of the Pirud. Get rid of whatever it is that's separating you. And if nothing separates you, then you are Echad. Even in the Basar. So it's hurts from the fact that the Neshama is Chelik of this, of one Neshama that gets divided. The Guf also is like that. It was one Guf. It got divided. So how do you achieve Echad? Find whatever it is that is getting between you and get rid of it. So it's what you don't do that creates the Achdus, not what you do. That's called Ayin. A talent in not. Shlila, not Chiyuv. What comes between you that keeps you separate? What is Ava She'eina Tluya B'Davar? Any little thing that puts you on a different page from each other prevents the Achdus. So if you're thinking about somebody else, Chas V'Shalom, if there's a sound, the radio, the anything that you're thinking that she's not thinking, no Echad. It's not Achdus. If you don't want the same thing, B'Sha'as Maisa, no Achdus. If you're angry, if you're a little shikir, no achdus. Anything can become a block, an interference. So the best way to say it is like this. All things prevent achdus. Because in order to have achdus, there can't be anything. It has to be no thing. Ayin, not yesh. And that's why you have to talk before, you have to be on the same page, in the same mood, with the same kavana, with the same tachlis. Then you become echad. anything is a stira to achdus. Achdus comes from bittul, not from yesh. So whatever is a problem. What isn't, that allows achdus. So in the Mishnah, there are actually two girsois. There's ava she'eina tluya bedava, which lasts forever, or there's an ava hatluya beloy dava, in an ayin, in a loy dava. So the definition is, in simple language, intimacy means no thing. No things. If you can get rid of all things, that's it. That's intimacy. The difference is that the husband, gets rid of all things like a man, and the wife gets rid of all things in a feminine way. Difference being, the man is mashpia so completely that there is nothing left. She is mekabel to such a degree that there is nothing else. But they're both trying to get to a point of nothing. Loy dover. So you see that in the secular world, intimacy has lost its definition. There's no intimacy. Husbands and wives do things. That's not intimacy. Intimacy is non-thing, a nothing. That's a chush. And that's chassidus. To be able to feel bittul, ayin, not yesh. So the intimacy is the physical application of the notion that a mashpia loses himself in the hashpah, and a makabel loses himself in the Kabbalah. So really, when we were learning with Reb Yehl, we completely disappeared. We were so much into being makabel that time didn't matter and space didn't matter. Nothing. Question is, why did he stop at the end of an hour? Why didn't he lose himself in the hashpah and go on for 4 hours and then say, what? It's been 4 hours? That's a whole other subject, Nechsidus. Hashpah has a gvul. Kabbalah is bli gvul. Being mekabel is bli gvul. Hashpah has a gvul. I was talking yesterday to some women. There's a little piece in the Rishimis. The Rebbe says that the Friedrich Rebbe told him that two times in his childhood, the Katnusim, he heard the Rebbe Rashab being Mavis Sedra, and it made him into a Baal Tshuva. Friedrich Rebbe says, made me into a Baal Tshuva. One time was Parshas Lech Lecha, and once was Parshas Vayera. And the Rebbe says, Friedrich Rebbe, my father was saying, Vayemer Hashem el Avram, and he was crying tears of pleasure. And you could see Viderguf Sugait Funeimus Elukus. You can see the body dissolving from the sweetness of Elukus. So I was trying to explain, what is so sweet about Vayemer Hashem el Avram? There are some very romantic, emotional psukim. Moshe Rabbeinu saying, "V'neflinu ani vi'amcha." But Vayemer Hashem el Avram, what are you getting so emotional about? But that's because we've become so insensitive. It's almost like, oh no. That's it. Now we have another mitzvah. It's always trouble. Vayemer Hashem el Avram is shockingly exciting. What? The Eibush that spoke to Avram? About what? Doesn't matter. Vikumta, a conversation between Eibishter and Avram. And Eibishter starts the conversation. What's going on here? And befrat, if you learn Chassidus, bleak vul, ein areich, ein seif, koil yachol, leishanisi, and that speaks to Avram? In fact, what taka happened when Vayemer Hashem el Avram? What changed? Avram was a good guy. Very good guy. Before Vayemer Hashem el Avram.
Okay,
so what changed?
Okay, no problem.
It's possible. Okay. Avram was hikir es beiri. He understood that the Eibishter is not the sun and not the moon, and he's not a bal gvul, and he doesn't have a goof. But one thing Avram did not know. The Eibishter speaks to people? This is a shocker. This bleak vul, Beire Eilam, will come and talk to you? He never imagined such a thing. In other words, that the Eibishter could become personal? Beirei Olam?
Yes, yeah.
Eisei Shamayim Va'aretz can become personal? There's no way that Avraham could have gotten to that conclusion on his own. He could as Beirei. But a Beirei doesn't talk to you. So this was a very personal, exciting chiddush. Historically, this is when we started. This is when it all started. It all began with Vayemer Hashem el Avram. So it's our anniversary. How can that not be exciting, emotional, personal? So when we learn, and particularly when we teach children, you can't skip over that. You can't just Vayemer Hashem el Avram. You want to know what he said? No. Before I get to what he said, the Eibishter spoke to Avram. Can you describe that a little bit? what motivated the Eibishter to speak to Avram? What? What was the Eibishter feeling? What was the Eibishter thinking that he comes to talk to Avram? What was Avram feeling? You talking to me? You talking to me? What could you possibly need to say to me? It's like sometimes the Rebbe will turn to a chassid unexpectedly and say something. The chassid didn't hear what he said. Why? He was in shock. Talking to me? Rabbi Fabrenian, where the Rebbe would point to somebody and tell him to say L'chaim. And everybody turned around to see, not talking to me, right? Must be somebody behind me. And the Rebbe would say, no, you. And he would turn around again. No, it couldn't be me. So the Eibishter comes and says, Avram. Which Avram? You're talking to me. It's such an emotional event. Vayemer Hashem el Avram, and the Eibishter is verkocht in something, and Avram is overwhelmed with. And we go again. Vayemer Hashem, and the Eibishter said, "El Avram to Avram." So, what are you doing? J.J. Hecht would tell a story about what the Rebbe said to him, or a letter that he got from the Rebbe. You see it on the clips also. He says, Kinderlach, listen to this. Oh, the Rebbe writes in the Sicha, no. Listen to this. Do you hear what the Rebbe is saying? That's how you have to learn a Pasuk Chumash. Not with Mefarshim. Not talking about Mefarshim. Not even talking about the Chassidish Taich. Just live it. How much changed the moment that the Eibishter spoke to Avram? This is not Stamap's little conversation. Back in the olden days, students would come for a pegisha. In the 50s and 60s, the big project, outreach project, was the pegishas. When college students would come to Crown Heights for a Shabbos. And every now and then, one or two of the students would stay, they would come back for yontif, whatever. One of those students came back for shuas. And I remember that he was staying in Mendel Baumgarten's house. He was very involved in Kiruv. So after Tehillim, Shavuos night, this guy was still hanging around 770. So Mendel said to him, you don't have to stay here if you're tired. The key is hanging, you know, wherever it does, and you let yourself into the house and you can go to sleep. He said, no, I'll stay. Mendel says, you really don't have to. Not mechuyev, you can go to sleep. He says, no. I heard that an 82-year-old rabbi is going to come out to speak at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock at night. Must be very important. I want to stay in here. There was a maimer Shavuos night. So by chassidim, it was like, 2 o'clock will be a maimer. There'll be a maimer. A maimer is going to happen. To this guy, he was like, wait a minute. An 80-year-old guy needs to say something 2 o'clock in the morning? I got to stay and hear this. It's alive. What do you have to say at 2 o'clock in the morning? So Vayemer Hashem El Avram. Really? We get used to it, we take it for granted, we skip over it. What's a Beida doing speaking to a Nivra? This needs more commentary than anything else in the whole Torah. Where you have people who say, I believe in God. I believe in creation. I believe the whole thing. But that he speaks to people, come on. That's, nah. He came down to Har Sinai, nah. He's a creator. What? He cares what you eat, this sandwich, that sandwich. Come on. That's Yishmo. Altzigut. But he cares about that. He's a Grisa Bashefa. He's a powerful God. But why does he care? And by us, it's Punkfaker. He's a powerful creator, ain't safe, bleak wool. Fine, make a taste. Want to be bleak wool? Be bleak wool. The Iker is. My mitzvah counts? It's negeya in atzmus that I do a mitzvah? That's, now you're talking. He's bleak vul on the violation, yeshanisi, what do I care? But this ain't safe bleak vul havaya, that loishanisi, gets upset if I do an avail? This I want to hear about. That's the difference between before Vayemer Hashem El Avram till after. Before Avram recognized that the Eibushter is bleak vul ain save leishanisi v'chul v'chul v'chul. After he realized that's all nice and good. The Iker is the Eibushter wants you. Because what did the Eibushter say when he spoke to Avram? Don't be a stranger. Come to me. Come to me. The bottom line is this. Torah and mitzvahs is an intimate relationship between the Eibushter and us. And intimacy means loy dover. A mitzvah is not a thing. One mitzvah, two mitzvahs, big mitzvahs. A mitzvah is not a thing. A mitzvah is a loy dover. And that's why Al Tiyuk Avodim Amisham Shemes Arava Manas Lekabu Pras. It should be an Ava Ha'inot Luya Bedover. Because if it's Tluya Bedover, then it's not intimacy. Stama Dover could be a good thing, a bad thing, but it's not intimacy. It's not Achtus. It's not Hashem Echad. So, intimacy in marriage is like a little a mushel for Avodas Hashem. Can you, for a minute, let go of all your things? For a minute. Law's up. So there's a bit of a confusion and controversy. What are you supposed to be thinking? What were you told? If you were told anything. What are you supposed to be thinking?
It's different. My chassan teacher said, but you read all over, not about Svaradavkin, about being Bonim Hagunim Yeshamayim, whatever.
So
I don't know if it's a stidifah.
And when you're being mamshich, and the fact that you're doing the mitzvah.
Well, there's a few kavanas.
Kavanas Arizal?
No, the kavanas of the mitzvahs of Zayeina, Purvu, and that's what is the mitzvah you're doing. It could even be to be mamali or whatever, that's a mitzvah in a certain sense.
Can I get Yetzirah
Dibritera?
It seems like anything but her. Trach does, krichahin, krichahed, anything.
Is this the, I don't mean, this is at the peak moment, or? Okay, good. I'm just like, it'll be pretty rough.
I think Rashi says, "Ki ilu kafe shed," the Gemara. Rashi says, "What does it mean, ki ilu kafe shed?" Bechol keichei u'mechavon lahana osa. So you are allowed to think about her.
I didn't take it.
See, thinking about children makes a lot of sense, because that's what you're doing. You're having a baby. So what should you be thinking? Of course you should be thinking. And in that, you're on the same page. So Rashi says, v'hoyu l'bosar echad, in the vlad, in the ben, it's bosar echad, and you're both involved or included in that bosar echad. So even in the kavona of the bosar echad, you're joined. You're on the same page. And what that does for the baby, can't begin to tell you. And what the damage is to the baby when you have the wrong kavanas, you can actually see it in the children. You see it. Not to get hung up on this topic, but any child who sees his mother's hair, the effect on the child, I'm talking about a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, if they see their mother's hair, it's not a theory, it's a fact. I don't know why, I can't explain it, but the feeling that a child has for a mama, doesn't exist if the kid sees his mother's hair. It's not a mama anymore. It's a different relationship. And dafka the hair, other things that are not so tzniyazdik don't have that same effect. Of course, it's not good for a kid to see anything that's not tzniyaz, but the hair. It's almost like subconsciously, a married woman has her hair covered. the hair is not covered, oops, this is not a married woman. If it's not a married woman, how could it be my mother? There is something that we have to be really conscious of. So if a child treats the mother as if she's not a mother, maybe that's the problem. I'm not talking about somebody who doesn't cover her hair. I'm talking about a little bit of hair. Something you should talk about with Jungelite. It's not a chumra to cover the hair. It's pikuach nefesh. Maybe that's why the Rebbe made such a fight over it in the first year. The Rebbe wouldn't be Masada Kedushin if you don't wear a shetel. And Lubavitcher women were not wearing shetels back then. Because in Russia, whatever it is, the Rebbe had to really, really fight for this. So all the things that it says in Shulchan Aruch about intimacy, when and how, the effect on the baby, maybe it's more concern for the baby than it is for the couple. So just for example, if there's a radio playing, and during the intimacy, something that's being said on the radio distracts your attention. And a baby is born. Is that baby going to have an attention deficit disorder? It was created out of a lack of attention. Worse than that, b'shas maise, the husband is thinking, I don't want to have a baby. We can't afford it. But a baby is born. How is that baby going to feel about living, dying? You didn't want me. This is scary stuff, but it's so true.
It's calling the father's yours.
More. But the mother also? I've heard from so many mothers who have the kid has a problem, and the mother would say, I knew it. Because b'shas maisa, I knew this was not right. I was not in the mood, I didn't want, I was angry, I was something was going on, I knew that this is not going to be good. Actually doctors who say that in the last, 15, 20 years, this is already years ago, there's been a radical increase in suicides among children. Accidental, intentional, whatever, but there's like a big, and it matches exactly the time when abortion became legal. So their theory is, now that it's legal, how many parents sit and discuss? Okay. So the child is born, no. This is scary stuff. Particularly after when the earliest days of a fetus is when the fetus is most sensitive, not least fakert. As the pregnancy develops, it becomes less sensitive because it's becoming magushim. After the child is born, he's certainly less sensitive, but more visible. So for most people, in the medical world, the really scary thing is that in the late months of the pregnancy, the parents actually sit and discuss, yeah or not? It's not just a kavana. They're actually talking about it. And the kid listens, and the kid hears it. So what were you planning to do to me? And I should honor you, right? You were planning to kill me. Pashit, the wisdom of Torah. It's so this movie that I made for Goyim. This has nothing to do with being a Jew. It has to do with the facts of life. Goyim have to get married. Peru Revu is a mitzvah. Adultery is an aveda. Which means their marriage is a marriage. So what's a marriage? So what's a mashpia? What's a makabel? How do you make healthy children? This is a universal topic.
So bringing it full circle, you're saying that this information is now that we have the Chabad house, this is what wants
to. I'm telling Shluchim, if you can do your Balabatim a favor and change their life for the better, aren't they going to become loyal to you? They'll thank you for the rest of their lives.
Can I stay?
Huh?
That's not happening?
They're afraid to talk about it.
Intimacy or?
Yeah. I mean, how many shluchim sit down and tell their balabatim how to behave in the bedroom? And yet they would be doing the Balabatim such a favor. So whoever sees the film, the common reaction, the most popular reaction is, why didn't anybody tell me? I already have 7 children. Why didn't anybody tell me? And it's a good taina. Why are we keeping this a secret? So enough bittul Torah. How's the learning going? It's interesting that the Rebbe writes concerning learning, hatzlocha, the lashon hatzlocha. Hasmoda, I understand. Learn by hasmoda, learn lishma. Hatzlocha in learning. That's what the Rebbe says about himself in Hayyem Yeh. Leimed b'shkida atzuma u'matzliach. There's a hatzlocha in learning. It's a special bracha. And the Hatzlacha is every hour of learning makes you a different person. Plus you become a different person. That's a Teira Dirgil in it. So Hatzlacha Rabba.